Blog Talk Radio.
I've heard before.
climbed the tree and scraped her knee. Her dress has got a tear. She waltzes on her way to mass and whistles on the stair. And underneath her wimple, she has curls in her hair. I've even heard her singing in the abbey. She's always late for chapel, but her penitence is real. She's always late for everything, except for every meal. I hate to have to say it, but I very firmly feel Maria's not an asset to the abbey. I'd like to say a word in her behalf. Maria makes me laugh.
How do you solve a problem like Maria? How do you catch a cloud and pin it down?
How do you find a word that means Maria?
A flippity-flippity, a will-o'-the-wisp,
a clown.
Many a thing you know you'd like to tell her. Many a thing she ought to understand. But how do you make her stay and listen to all you say? How do you keep a wave upon the sand?
Oh, how do you solve a problem like Maria?
How do you hold a moon in your hand?
When I'm with her, I'm confused, out of focus and bemused, and I never know exactly where I am.
Unpredictable as weather.
She's as flighty as a feather.
She's a darling.
She's a demon.
She's a lamb.
She'd outpester any pest, drive a hornet from its nest.
She can throw a whirling dervish out of world.
She is gentle, she is wild.
She's a riddle, she's a child.
She's a headache,
she's an angel. She's a girl.
How do you solve a problem like Maria? How do you catch a cloud and pin it down? How do you find a word that means Maria?
A flippity-flippity, a will-o'-the-wisp,
a clown.
Many a thing you know you'd like to tell her. Many a thing she ought to understand.
How do you make her stay and listen to all you say?
How do you keep a wave upon the sand?
Oh, how do you solve a problem like Maria?
Confidence they'll put the test, but I'll make them see I have confidence in me. Somehow I will impress them. I will be firm but kind, and all those children, heaven bless them, they will look up to me and mind me with each step. I am more certain everything will turn out fine. The world can all be mine. They'll have to agree I have confidence in me. I have confidence in sunshine. I have confidence in rain. I have confidence that spring will come again. Besides which, you see, I have confidence in me. Strength doesn't lie in numbers. Strength doesn't lie in wealth. Strength lies in night. When you wake up, wake up! It can be all I trust I need my heart to. All I trust becomes my own. I have confidence in confidence alone. Oh, help. I have confidence in confidence alone. Besides which, you see, I have
life, little girl, is an empty page that men will want to write on.
To write on.
You are 16, going on 17. Baby, it's time to think. Better beware, be canny and careful. Baby, you're on the brink. You are 16, going on 17, fellows will fall in line. Eager young lads and roués and cads will offer you food and wine. Totally unprepared are you to face a world of men. Timid and shy and scared are you, think beyond your kin. You need someone older and wiser telling you what to do. I am 17, going on 18. I'll take care of you.
Thank you. Hello and welcome to Storyboards with our S-Sparkle, brought to you by A Team of Voices. A Team of Voices is a group located on allpoetry.com, one of the largest poetry sites in the world. And I always like to say thank you to Kevin and his crew, keeping us set up and running and giving us a place to share our poetry. And, of course, thank you to Deborah Lee for running the group and the blog talk page so we can geek out live. A Team of Voices is sponsored by A.P. Taylor Foundation, and we have different shows every night of the week with different themes and different hosts. We have poetry games, slams, talk shows, magic tricks, contests, special events with poetic topics from A to Z. You can join by listening as we go live, listening to the playback. You can also download the playback. Also, you can join AP if you're not a member. Knock on A Team of Voices door and Deborah Lee will let you in. You can follow along with all our topic boards, add your own poetry, and click the link to read along with the poetry that we share online. That we share live, rather. Tonight, we are still celebrating a musical march, and of course, by the intro, I'm sure you have figured it out by now, we are celebrating the Sound of Music. I thought it would be fun to celebrate different musicals in the month of March. And this actually was my first one that was supposed to open up March, but it got postponed. So I'm happy to make it up tonight. Throughout the show, I will have lots of information about the music and about some trivia facts about the film as well and about the musicians that supported the music. And, of course, we will have some poetry. So without further ado, I'd like to talk about some of the music from the film. So, of course, The Sound of Music soundtrack, music and lyrics by Rodgers and Hammerstein, was released in 1965 by RCA Victor and is one of the most successful soundtrack albums in history, having sold more than 20 million copies worldwide. The soundtrack has been issued in German, Italian, Spanish, and French. The soundtrack spent 2 weeks in the number one position of the Billboard 200 in 1965 and remained in the top 10 for 109 weeks. That's a lot of weeks. From May 1st, 1965 till July 16th, 1967, the most of any soundtrack in the chart's history. It remained on the Billboard 200 for a total of 238 weeks. In 2015, Billboard named the original soundtrack album the second best charting album of all time. It has the best-selling album in the United Kingdom in 1965, 1966, and 1968, and the second best-selling of the decade, spending a total of 70 weeks at number one in the UK album chart. The album also stayed up for 73 weeks in the Norwegian charts, and as of December 2017, it is the 10th best charting album of all time in that country. RCA first reissued the soundtrack album in compact disc in 1985, and the album has been reissued several times, including anniversary editions, 1995, 2000, 2005, 2010, 2015, and in 2023. As a five-disc super deluxe edition, the CD editions incorporate music material from the film that would not fit on the original LP, with 2023 release presenting the score in its entirety and including 40 unreleased tracks such as Ultimate Takes and other material removed from the final version. Three songs from the original Broadway production, An Ordinary Couple, How Can Love Survive, and No Way to Stop It, were replaced in the film with two new songs, I Have Confidence and Something Good. For the original Broadway show, the music was written by Richard Rodgers and the lyrics by Oscar Hammerstein II. Both the lyrics and music for both songs were written by Rodgers and Hammerstein, died in 1960. All songs were arranged and conducted for the soundtrack by Irwin Kostal. In 2018, the soundtrack was selected for preservation in the National Recording Registry by the Library of Congress as being culturally, historically, or artistically significant. The Sound of Music soundtrack sold 500,000 copies in its first 2 weeks in the United States. Elsewhere, the album achieved large sales in the UK, Japan, Canada, Australia, becoming one of the best-selling records in the 1960s. It became the first album to sell over 10,000 units in Finland. The record peaked at number one in Australia, the UK, and the U.S. And I still have this soundtrack on vinyl, which is very exciting for me, because I think I've had it since I was, it was my mom, so I've had it since I was a preteen. I think she started giving me, well, she gave me that one at least as a preteen, so, and I still have it, so I have it on record, or vinyl, and I don't know if I bring it out too much, but I got all my records out, finally, out of storage, so I think I might enjoy that. I would like to hear some more of those 40 soundtracks of unreleased stuff. I haven't seen too many of that. That sounds very interesting. Before I read any poetry, I am going to play a couple more songs and say a couple more things, and then we will get down to some poetry. So I hope you enjoyed that information, and stay tuned for some trivia and some poetry. There we go.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens, bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens, brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things. Cream-colored ponies and crisp apple strudels, doorbells and sleigh bells and schnitzel with noodles, wild geese that fly with the moon on their wings. These are a few of my favorite things. Girls in white dresses with blue satin sashes, snowflakes that stay on my nose and eyelashes, silver white winters that melt into spring. These are a few of my favorite things. When the dog bites, when the bee stings, when I'm feeling sad, I simply remember my favorite things, and then I don't feel so bad. Drops on roses and whiskers on kittens, bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens, brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things. Cream-colored ponies and crisp apple strudels, doorbells and sleigh bells and schnitzel with noodles, wild geese that fly with the moon on their wings. These are a few of my favorite things. Girls in white dresses with blue satin sashes, snowflakes that stay on my nose and eyelashes, silver white winters that melt into spring. These are a few of my favorite things. When the dog bites, when the bee stings, when I'm feeling sad, I simply remember my favorite things, and then I don't feel so bad. Thank you.
Let's see if I can make it easier.
Doe, a deer, a female deer. Ray, a drop of golden sun. Me, a name I call myself. Far, a long, long way to run. So, a needle pulling thread. La, a note to follow so. Tea, a drink with jam and bread. That will bring us back to Doe. Oh, oh, oh.
Doe!
A deer, a female deer.
Ray!
A drop of golden sun.
Me!
A name I call myself.
Far!
A long, long way to run.
So, a needle pulling thread.
La! A note to follow so.
Do, re, mi, fa, so, and so on are only the tools we use to build a song. Once you have these notes in your heads, you can sing a million different tunes by mixing them up, like this.
So, do, la, fa, mi, do, re.
Can you do that?
So, do, la, fa, mi, do, re.
So, do, la.
It all together.
Do, do, la, fa, mi, do, re. Do, do, la, mi, do, re, do.
Good, but it doesn't mean anything.
So we put in words, one word for every note, like this.
When you know the note to sing, you can sing most anything
together.
When you know the note to sing, you can sing most anything.
Do,
a deer, a female deer, play a drop of golden sun. A name
me, 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 so, so.
awesome. I love that one. I love that little bit of a sad overture. So a little bit more, I got a poem for you, but a little bit more about some of the people that I had mentioned earlier, which would be the music and writers. Richard Rodgers, a little bit about him. He was born in 1902, passed away in 1979. He was an American composer who worked primarily in musical theater with 43 Broadway musicals for over 900 songs to his credit. Rodgers was one of the most well-known American composers of the 20th century, and his compositions had a significant influence in popular music. Rodgers is known for songwriting partnerships, first with the lyricist Lorenz Hart, and then with Oscar Hammerstein II. With Hart, he wrote musicals throughout the 1920s and 30s, including Pal Joey, A Connecticut Yankee, On Your Toes, Babes in Arms. With Hammerstein, he wrote musicals through the 1940s and 1950s, such as Oklahoma, Flower Drum Song, Carousel, South Pacific, The King and I, and The Sound of Music. His collaborations with Hammerstein in particular are celebrated for being the Broadway musical to a new maturity by telling stories that were focused on characters and drama rather than the earlier lighthearted entertainment of the genre. He was the first person to win all four of the top American Entertainment Awards in theater, film, recording, and television, an Emmy and Grammy, an Oscar, and a Tony, now known collectively as the EGOT. In addition, he was awarded the Pulitzer Prize, making him one of the two people who received all five awards. In 1978, Rodgers was in the integral group of Kennedy Center honorees for lifetime achievement in the arts. So quite a bit of underneath his belt. I know that my grandmother was a huge, huge Rodgers and Hammerstein fan. She was a huge music fan, and I'm lucky enough to have some notebooks of hers with her handwriting, all written down some of her favorite songs, because back then you couldn't just look up song lyrics and print them off. They had to write them off by hand if they wanted them. So I have this little book of hers, and with just lyrics that she loved. It's all in French, though, so I can't quite read it. But I can translate some of it, but The Sound of Music does make an appearance, and I believe Carousel does, too. And so she was definitely a big musical fan. So, and I don't know, that's just been passed on. But I do have my first poem of the night. We are going to Lockdown Lars's poem. Thank you so much, Lockdown Lars, for dropping. He wrote to Climb Every Mountain. We haven't gotten to that song yet, but we are going to do his poem. So, here we go. This is To Be One by Lockdown Lars. I climbed many a mountain to seek out my life song, and chancing upon a love fountain, feeling in essence that I belong. A wind whispers quietly to me, this, yes, this is our dream, where you will find your destiny, so follow a river's ripple downstream. Doves and larks begin to sing, no longer lonely will you be. This will be your eternal spring. Climb aboard a heart's harmony. Their sound now feels like a beat. I want to tell everyone the tale. More each day I feel dancing feet, sure that I am on the rainbow trail. And so in these rivers flowing, I setting upon Harmony Island, peace and love feed my growing, now with the one hand in hand. And this was This is a, I'm trying to, this go, okay, so this plays into an ongoing storyline of mine based around Harmony Island by Lockdown Lars. So it looks like this is a bit of a series. I was just reading his author's notes so I can give a little tribute to that. So if you like the storyline, you could definitely check out, and there is actually a link provided at the bottom to link you to some more of those series or pertaining an ongoing storyline. So I thought this was absolutely brilliant. I liked how he took an existing storyline that he's kind of working on, and he was inspired by Climb Every Mountain, but was able to mix that. And I think, you know, sometimes when we're looking for inspiration and we see these prompts and, you know, we think, oh, well, you don't have to write about The Sound of Music. You can infuse it with whatever your muse is into or putting out at the time. And then, of course, just be influenced by some of the lyrics or some of the characteristics of the film, song lyrics, or music in general. I thought this was beautifully done. I really loved, there was like bits of alliteration, not too overwhelming, but they were just kind of dabbed in there very nicely. And, you know, some examples of that would be Wind Whispers. And there was another one with, oh, here we go, Hearts Harmony. I really love that one, Hearts Harmony. I loved the way that it flowed. I loved how the two H's, but also the feeling that goes with it. I mean, when you speak of doves and larks singing and the heart no longer being lonely because two people have found each other, and it is like using nature as the eternal spring, quote-unquote, to kind of symbolize that warmth in one's heart and soul when they find that person. I thought that was beautifully done. I also liked how he kind of gave a tribute to not only music, but other forms of artistic expression with the more each day I feel dancing feet. You know, you hear that expression, I'm feeling light on my feet, or, you know, I'm singing in the rain. You've got that whole tap dance song. Often music goes hand in hand with dancing, so I do like how you brought that in there. I also kind of smiled a bit on the rainbow trail, making me think of, well, maybe there was some sadness before this love was found, but now there's like this rainbow and the skies are brighter. So I thought this was quite beautiful, perfect for tonight. I really appreciate it, Lockdown Lars. And I love that you brought it. So as always, I do a little bit of trivia, and I'm going to play a little bit of music, and then we're going to talk a little bit more about Rodgers and Hammerstein. Well, mostly Hammerstein. We already talked about Rodgers a little bit. But a little bit of trivia that I always find interesting when I go on to, and of course, thank you, IMDb, for being just a wonderful showcase of actors and trivia and, you know, things that went wrong. But I thought it was really interesting that Christopher Plummer intensely disliked working on this movie. He was known to refer to it as the Sound of Mucus, or S&M, and likened working with Dame Julie Andrews to being hit over the head with a big Valentine's Day card every day. Nonetheless, he and Andrews remained close friends until his death. Andrews claimed that Plummer's cynicism probably helped his performance on how this was keeping from being too sentimental. And I agree with that because he really was kind of grumpy with her at the beginning. So that probably was a little bit of real grumpiness going through. I know there's a lot of people that are kind of like, all right, stop being happy all the time. You're bothering me. So maybe I can kind of see that. So another one that I thought was cool, that Christopher Plummer accidentally said the word captain to Julie Andrews during an argument scene. Despite the error, producer and director Robert Wise thought it was amusing, and he liked it so much that he kept it in the movie. Julie Andrews saying supercalifragilisticexpialidocious to the children in the cast to entertain them between shooting. Since Mary Poppins in 1964, hadn't yet been released. They just thought she'd made it up for them. And that's pretty cool because when the movie came out, they probably were so excited. I couldn't even imagine it. I just am such a fan of Julie Andrews. I just couldn't even imagine it. And a little background on information on the real Captain Von Trapp was also known or available to Christopher Plummer. So he took to the Salzburg Mountains with an interpreter. They met with George's nephew and asked him what the real man was like. The nephew told him that he was a most boring man he ever met. So, all right, so maybe not so great reviews. So it's a few little tidbits about the film. And, of course, I'm going to play a couple more songs, talk about the songs a little bit, and then get some more trivia in there. And I do still have more poetry. So stick around and enjoy some of the songs. Here we go.
The lonely goat herd lay, or lay, or lay, ooh. Loud was the voice of the lonely goat herd lay, or lay, or low. Folks in a town that was quite remote herd lay, or lay, or lay, ooh. Lusty and clear from the goat herd's throat herd lay, or lay, or low. Bridge of a castle moat heard lay, or lay, or lay, ooh.
Men on a road with a load to tote heard lay, or lay, or ooh.
Men in the midst of a troubled joke heard lay, or lay, or lay, ooh.
Men drinking beer with a foam afloat heard lay, or lay, or pale pink coat heard lay, or lay, or lay,
ooh. She yodeled back to the lonely goat
heard
lay, or lay, or
low. Soon her mama with a gleaming gloat heard lay, or lay, or lay, ooh. What a duet for a girl and goat heard lay, or lay, or low.
childhood, I must have done something good. Nothing comes from nothing, nothing ever could. So somewhere in my youth or childhood, I must have done something
standing there, loving me. Whether or not you should.
So somewhere in my youth or childhood, I must have done something good.
Excellent. And I do have a little information about the real Von Trapp family. But before I go into that, I do want to let on a caller. Hello, Heather. Heather? I'll try to unmute you again.
Sorry. I'm sorry. Say what?
Can
you ask me a question?
Hear me? Oh, I was
yes,
waiting on. I was saying hello. Hi.
Okay.
How's it going?
Hi, Sky.
Oh, it's okay. How's it going?
It's hot out here today. That's good. Just got done with dinner.
Oh, my gosh. Are you kidding me?
What are
we got pounded with snow, and now we have ice rain. There's a winter effect until tomorrow, a winter weather warning effect, because of ice rain, and then we had a snowstorm on Saturday.
Wow.
Everybody lost power on Sunday. My whole town lost power. I didn't lose power. I think I'm on the same power line as the school. I hardly ever lose power. I lost power about 5 minutes. And so on Sunday, I had some unexpected guests here at my house showering. And using all my power outlets. Yes, because practically my whole town went out of power. Power, legit, practically. We had a two-hour delay on Monday because so many people were without power, and the roads still were being cleaned up. They just delayed school. Three surrounding towns canceled school Monday because of all the power outages, but we didn't get canceled, unfortunately. We just got a two-hour delay. I get paid for two more snow days, so I'm pretty adamant about getting them because I get paid up to five snow days a year, so I have two more that they need to do so that I can get paid for 2 days off. I do get paid for every late start, so I was at home having my coffee and doing just being leisurely about my morning and still getting paid for those 2 hours. I was okay with that. So I don't know about you. It's hot there, not hot here.
Well, it is to me. It says it's 66, but it's not. It's hotter than that. I don't know what the temperature's off somewhere. I get heated really easy because of the damage to that membrane that surrounds your brain. It cools the brain off when it's hot, and it warms it up, puts more blood up there when it's cold. Mine doesn't work, so I'm susceptible to overheating real easy.
Oh.
Because of the trauma, the trauma I had gone through. So I'm in t-shirts and shorts at 61 degrees, and everybody else got coats on, so it's weird.
I don't put my heat above 62. I do not like it warm, so I'm okay. I don't like it freezing, but I don't like it warm. I tend to be a furnace. I run hot. I don't know if I am hot, but I definitely run hot. My ex ran very cold, and they had terrible circulation. And every time they would, I think I always went to bed earlier than my ex, and they would jump in the bed, and they would be like cringing out of coldness, and they would cling, and I want a fan on it while I sleep, and we'd always fight about, I want the fan on the whole night, and my ex was like, it's the middle of winter, you don't need a fan. I'm like, I do, I need it on my face all night.
Yeah.
And then they would cling to me because they were so cold.
1 foot out?
Yeah, one foot out. And then about 10 minutes after getting into bed, my ex would just push me away and be like, okay, that's enough. I'm sweating over here. God, get away from me. About 10 minutes. I woke someone up. Okay. So I might have to deal with that.
Should I hear the Von Trapp family?
I do, but I might have to go. I might have to play one more song because I woke someone up yelling. So, I'm going to play one more song because someone woke up. So just give me a second here, Hatter. Figure this
out. Sure.
Okay, so Good thing I don't have too much more left of the show because I do have someone up, but let's talk about, let's see if this will work out for me. In the cinematic scene of the Sound of Music, the Von Trapps flee Salzburg, Australia, under the cover of night and hike across the surrounding mountains to safety in Switzerland. Had they scaled the Alps in real life, however, the Von Trapps would have crossed into Nazi Germany, not neutral Switzerland, which was approximately 200 miles away. So they got that geography wrong a little bit. So a lot of things that were changed. The names of the children were changed in the film and the age of Liesel. And Maria worked as a tutor to one of the Von Trapps' child, not a governess to them at all. And the Von Trapps married more than a decade before they fled to Australia. Three Von Trapps were omitted from the film because they were nine, and she was actually pregnant with one of them when they fled. And the captain was a warmer, more engaged father than he appeared on film. The Sound of Music filled the Von Trapps' house before Maria's arrival, and the driving force behind the Von Trapp singers was left out of the film. Like many families, the Von Trapps were broke during the Great Depression, losing their fortune when their bank went under in the 1930s. Forced to raise money, the Von Trapps took in boarders, including Father Franz Wisner, who recognized their musical talent after hearing them sing. As the family's musical director, the priest crafted Von Trapps into professional singers so that they can raise some money for themselves to live. So there's a couple of the differences of the film versus the movie. I'm going to go right into, I'm going to read Pretty Bird's poem. We only have two more poems of the night. If there's a noise in the background, I do apologize, but I'm going to do the best that I can do. So, all right.
Understand. Yes. I got a question.
Yes.
Is this the movie where the father is timed when he buttons up his vest?
No.
Because I don't think I ever saw the... Okay. Okay.
This is The Sound of Music with, do you know Julie Andrews?
I've never saw it.
These are a few of my favorite things. I'm sure you've heard that
song.
Yeah,
I've seen the song. Yeah, I've seen her sing that song, but I never saw it, watched the movie.
Yeah, so this is that film. So,
cool.
I was actually saving Edelweiss for the playout with the So Long Farewell. But I needed a moment, actually, we only have one more song of the night, so I've been hitting the songs hard here. So this is Pretty Birds. Do you have her link?
It's up there, and boom.
It is up there. All right.
Okay.
Now, I always get super nervous reading Pretty Bird. It's like a big shoes to fill, you know? Okay, here we go. The learning curve of hand-stitching fine leather goods. I thought I knew, in theory, not practice, having bore witness to the intricacies of rugged and rustic beauty, tough, yet so soft to the touch. Waxing linen and neutral hues, where beeswax never minded, the drag through its core, as threads bear the weight and overestimated tinsel strength. But it holds firm, barely keeping together in overused facades under the precipitation of invincible, locked in the strong grasp of a diamond-cut saddle stitch. Fingertips graze the perfect angles, mirrored back to front and front to back, as that crease burns in, tracing that stitch line and parallels, pulling focus to the beauty and skill with which it was dragged through flesh. All the while, each time it opened and closed, brought disparity between the friction within and the perfection without. How could something so beautiful, made to be the strongest it could be, fray under everyday use? There can be no Achilles, no missed spots, nothing overlooked in the saturation of sinew, used to birth utility and hand-forged nuance, waxing poetic as each string enters and exits the same place, crossing paths over so briefly as they lock in place, hidden between the layers where no one can witness the bond. As they see its perfect stitch lines, as perfect angles where they can wear through in years of carpal tunnel repeats, without a thought as to why it still would hold firm. Locked in place, stitched together through the intricacies where time only makes it stronger. I thought I knew, in theory, not practice, having bore witness to the intricacies of rugged and rustic beauty, tough yet so soft to touch. But I took the long way through, a learning curve of hand stitching fine leather goods. End poem. That was absolutely beautiful. And obviously that was, well, maybe not obviously to some people, but it was for the sew a needle pulling thread. And I loved the metaphor throughout. I thought it was just, I want to hear her read this one. You're going to have to put it on SoundCloud, Pretty Bird, or something, or come and read it to me again. Because though I did read her, I want to hear it in your words. I want to hear it in your voice. But I absolutely loved the metaphor. The idea of, and if I'm gathering it right, of how one has to stitch their skin. And, you know, there are times when we're so vulnerable. And that stitching of that, you know, that tear, those little tears, and those, where was it, through years of carpal tunnel repeat, and how we often have to make our skin like leather to be able to survive in the world. And this whole thing of rugged and rustic beauty, tough yet soft to the touch, how someone can be so thick-skinned yet so soft to the touch and sensitive. And you hear so many like metaphors about building walls and breaking through walls, not you specifically, but people in general, that tends to be a go-to. And not that it's not a good, not that it's not a good example, not that it's not a good metaphor, but the idea of this stitching skin, and you know, you see those bruises that don't heal and things like that, and bruises that lay beneath the skin or broken bones beneath the skin. But the idea of sewing yourself a leather skin, I just really, really love that. And the whole thing was just absolutely beautiful. I loved how you enveloped the beginning of the lines back into the end. I thought it wrapped it up so beautifully, and it makes you think, I mean, you hear it at the beginning, and it's beautiful the way you say it at the beginning, but it isn't until you go through the whole piece and then you see where the metaphor is going. It hits differently at the very end because you kind of just been dragged through the mud, and you're kind of coming out the other side and seeing it with a perspective of what you had written, and it changes it a bit. I mean, like I said in the beginning, it's still hard hitting. It definitely, if you're scrolling, it draws you in. It's very, very hard hitting, but there's something to be said about after all the thoughts in the middle to go back to that thought and kind of just reiterate that and say, this is where I was and this is where I am. Absolutely brilliant. Hatter, what do you think?
Okay, fabric, the leather, the stitching is a metaphor being frail.
You know, I took it how I took it, Hatter. It doesn't mean that I'm right. So you take it however you take it. You know, just because I took it the way that I did doesn't even mean that Pretty Bird meant it that way. I was just taking it from what I thought.
Because it mentions, you know, like the diamond cut saddle stitch and the perfect angles mirrored back to front to back. And then it mentions that it's leather stitched, so I sort of take it as it's easily undone, but it, together it's strength.
Yeah, definitely. So this whole thing, barely keeping together an overused facade under the perception of invincible, locked in the strong grasp of a diamond cut saddle stitch. So a lot of people, to me, again, this is just my opinion, to me, some of the strongest people that seem like they hold it together are very vulnerable. They're more vulnerable than you think, and they're having that mask on, that face on. I mean, how many people would you say, how are you? Yeah, I'm doing fine. How often is that really true? So, again,
you know,
go ahead.
It's to be one of those people that are not allowed to have a bad day. And everybody leans on you. Yeah. Yeah, like the source of strength can easily be frail.
And I think people forget that when you bring up a good point, that whole idea of not allowed to be because you're everybody's rock. That's a really hard place to be when you're everybody's rock and you're not allowed to have that moment of vulnerability.
Yeah. And you're most criticized when you have a bad day and it shows, and you might be apologetic for something you said or did or were short with somebody, and you're not forgiven as easily.
Mm-hmm.
Mad world.
mad world. Well, thank you so much, Pretty Bird. Like I said, I do want to hear you read this sometime, so I'm going to have to figure that out. Okay, Hatter, you are my last poem of the night, so you're on the board. I'm going to have you read.
Yeah.
And then we're going to play my last song.
Counting the days I spent. Counting is okay. It was like this. When did you notice she turned 16? She was 10 just the other day. I have not finished growing her. She cannot leave here today. If time comes too fast, will she know to slow down? If no one's here, will she still hear the sounds of things she kept so close inside, those things she's written saying goodbye? Tell me, please, could it be me, counting the days I spent, wandering free with no place to be and no memory of where I went?
Excellent. I hate this song, I have to tell you.
I
love the film. I hate the song. I hate the song. So there, I mean, for obvious reasons why, right? But I love your poem. You took it in a different way, and I like that you took it in a different way because I really hate the song, personally. So, and it's kind of funny because I was talking earlier about how my grandmother loved this film, and that was one of her favorite songs. But again, my grandmother grew up in a different time and a different mindset, and now we're just not raised like that anymore. But I'll first comment on your poem, and then I'll get on for what I was saying about what I'm saying. I thought this was really cool how you kind of brought it into when did you notice she turned 16? She was 10 just the other day, and I think a lot of fathers, you know, and mothers, and I'm only saying father because your voice, it was your reading, so that's why I go right to dads, but a lot of parents look at their children, and it's hard to see them as not children and grown up. And then all of a sudden, like, I don't know what I'm going to do when my goddaughter starts dating. I'm just going to lock her up like that. It's just a scary, scary thing. You know, because one day they're in pigtails and the next they're getting on the back of someone's motorcycle and you're like, what are you doing right now? Like, what's happening? I mean, that's the way that I... that I kind of took your poem, especially towards the beginning. Like, I, you know, kids grow up too fast, and they got to slow down and enjoy childhood. You know, I work with fifth graders, and all the fifth graders, they're not allowed to date in fifth grade, but all you see them is passing notes. Do you like me? Do you want to be my boyfriend? Telling you, I'm like, we're fifth grade people. Slow down.
Yeah.
They go so fast.
Yeah, really.
So I really love the question, you know, tell me, please, could it be me, like, counting down the days I spent? Because sometimes you just, you blink and it's gone. So I just love your perspective on this poem. Thank you very much for bringing it. What I meant by I hate the song, if you listen to the lyrics, it says, you know, she's like, you are older and wiser, I'll take it. It's all about him taking care of her because she's young and naive, and she's very vulnerable, and the girl's like, okay, I'll do what you tell me to do. And I'm just like, this would never fly today. And I know I'm not totally PC. I don't want to cut everything out. I don't think they should cut it out of the film. I don't think that they should cut it out of the musical. A lot of people think that nowadays. They're like, oh, if this isn't PC now, cut it all out. Then we shouldn't say it. I don't believe that, but I do think we should be, when it comes on, we say to people, yeah, this is, you know, it's a nice song. It was in its day, but it's, this kind of thinking is outdated now. But again, it doesn't mean you cut it out completely. It just means you educate. If you're watching it with your kids and you're like, this isn't really
history.
What we think anymore. Yeah, yeah. So,
yeah,
though
that
I don't want to see it
no,
cut.
You're right.
Yeah. Yeah. Though I don't want to see a cut, I do want to make a disclaimer that I don't agree with the song. and that is a perspective thing. Like I said, my grandmother loved this song. But that was her perspective of that time where the man very much did take care of the woman, and the woman was very much like, oh, I'll do whatever you want me to do.
Were the roles that were already put in place before you're born.
So, but I mean, we're better educated now. We have, and that's what I like about the Disney movies. A lot of people say, oh, those old Disney movies are terrible because they teach women, you know, whatever. And I agree. The newer ones, have women's voices a lot better, but it doesn't mean the old ones are crap. You know, they're still fine.
The one thing that would shake a man's world is when the women got together and boycotted everything, went on strike.
I'm sorry?
That's what would shake a man's world is when the women, the wives, would get together and go on strike.
Yeah.
Quit cooking, quit cleaning. Yeah. Open the men's eyes.
And there was a cultural shift, you know, after World War II. It's just what it is. So we just go and we
it's
move forward, and
it's
a different climate. So, yeah. All right. So, Hatter, my arms are falling asleep, rocking to this child who is now back asleep, kinda.
Did you have anybody call in earlier?
No, it's just me.
Did anybody call in?
No.
Sorry, I'm late.
Oh, no, it's okay. I had a fun time. I played a lot of music. That's why my music is done now. I played a lot of music. Yeah. I talked about songs.
Time?
Yeah, I had a good time. I talked to myself. I talked about trivia. I had a blast. The replay will be fun to listen to. Yeah. So I ain't scared about that. I have so many clips that I'm not too worried about being alone for a little while. But I am going to talk about...
Me time.
I am going to talk about Oscar Hammerstein real quick before we close out. So Oscar Greenlee Hammerstein, it's Clendening Hammerstein II. Oh, my gosh, he's got a longer name than I have. Well, no, not really. Actually, he doesn't, but very close. He was born in 1885. And passed away in 1960. He was an American lyricist, and he's usually uncredited director in the musical theater for nearly 40 years. He won 8 Tony Awards and 2 Academy Awards for the Best Original Song. Many of his songs are standard repertoire for vocals and jazz musicians. He co-wrote over 850 songs. He is best known for his collaboration with composer Richard Rodgers, which we did talk about earlier today, as a duo, Rodgers and Hammerstein, with musicals include Oklahoma, Carousel, South Pacific, The K and I, and of course, The Sound of Music. So there's a little bit about him. And I'm going to end the show. I want to thank, I do have one more by Titus, but he had a SoundCloud up there, but now it's gone. And I'm not sure if he wants his SoundCloud read or if he wants a reader. So I'm going to hold on to that till next week and clarify that for him, because the SoundCloud link doesn't work anymore. So I'll get back to you on that. Thank you, Lockdown Lars, Pretty Bird, and Hatter for all contributing to the show. And Titus, thank you too. I'm just going to pull you over. And I hope you guys have a good night. We only have one play-out song, and then I'm going to be ending. So I'll see you. Oh, we need to talk about shows. I didn't do that yet. Let's do that really quick. So tomorrow I am on again, and we are starting my new series. It is a Tolkien series. We're going to be talking about the Silmarillion. There's going to be less clips, so I do need some callers to call in and talk to me a little bit, because we're going to have a far less clips on that. It's the Music of Einar, because we're still in March. So it's subject to change. So if I'm able to come on at 8 because people are in sleep in my house, then I'm on at 8. But if they're not asleep, then I have to wait till they're down. So it's a little touch and go here. So 8 is a rarity. It's usually probably about 8:39. But sometimes I could get it at 8. But I have lots of characters. We're talking about how the Lord of the Rings, how he built that world. It was absolutely amazing. He built an entire world of it. And it really, the foundation was amazing. So we're going to go step by step because Star Wars is over. And we're going to start to go with Tolkien. So we're going to be on tomorrow. And then on Thursday, Sweet Pea is doing her local folklore part 2, so bring a folklore poem. On Friday, there is
Strange
no Friday
World.
Oh, no, there is. Okay,
Strange World.
Is that you?
Yes, yeah.
Okay, you want to talk about that?
Yeah, it'll be a Strange World. What I do is update the advancement of AI and anything strange that we don't, that isn't reported, things that there's no explanation for that's around us that we take for granted, or as technology advances, we'll keep an eye on it. So just the weird things in the strange world. Thank you.
Oh, awesome. Okay. And then Saturday, you want to talk about Saturday?
Saturday is Taylor Open Poetry. Deborah and myself will be there also. It's open poetry Saturday.
Awesome. And then Monday night, I do see you, Sweet. We're closing, but I'm going to have you read before we close. Monday night is... I do see you, Sweet.
Pick a prop.
Yeah, I do see you. Oh, my gosh. Okay, hold on. Monday night is Monday night personal prop Monday. She goes live at 10 as part of her color series, Blue. Amazing. She has amazing artwork. I have 3 saves in the color series. I feel like I always owe you, Deb. Sorry, Deb. Mondays are just not always easy for me. And she has a word bank, of course. It is optional. It is beautiful crayon. And they're optional. So you can use it. You cannot use it. And she's here. I wasn't going to leave without you. Don't worry, I did see you. I mean, I've only got one arm available at the time, but I did see you. And hi, Sweet Pea.
Hi, babies. I'm so sorry I'm late.
Oh, don't worry. I you're not really like, my times always change, so you're never really late, because sometimes I go on at 9, sometimes I go on at 8, sometimes I go on at 8:30, sometimes I go on at 9:30. If I'm going on anything past 9:30, I cancel, because 10 o'clock is too late for me. So,
Hi, Sheets.
Hi, honeys.
How are you?
I'm good. I was very excited. I love this. I love this world. So I will read quickly because I know you got a baby in your arm. But I wrote the quote by Sister Maria. And
do you want to put your link up first? Put your link up.
Yes, I will. Sorry.
And don't quick read. Don't read quick. Be, you know.
Okay.
Take it easy. Take it okay.
Okay.
I want to enjoy it.
I want to enjoy it. It's kind of silly. It's silly.
Okay.
But it's Black Sheep, and I did write to the 1965 film The Sound of Music. Sister Margarita says, after all, the wolf and the black sheep is just as warm. She says this about Maria in support of her free-spirited ways. So this is my black sheep poem about spirited people. Dreams are murdered in acts of kindness, guided by the hands of justification, seen through eyes blind to alternative perspectives. But what of those who break the silence? Do you condemn those who wear plaid pants and use curse words and orange crayons? Shepherds seek a world of perfection, obedient, traditional, conventional, toy soldiers standing at attention. Dare to speak against the afflictions, the brutality, false realities of the unspoken. Walk away from the bullies painting pretenses. Raise your voice, stand against the normal pace. Dare to stand alone in the crowd telling tales of all things new. So different from the crowds, even the black sheep can't describe the crazy now. Call this joy design, outside the lines, flat, and lovely anyhow. End poem.
I didn't think this was funny. Why did you think it was silly? I didn't get the silly vibe. This is awesome. Like, not that silly isn't awesome, but I didn't see that this was silly. I mean, just my perspective. My mom always loves to tell me how she was the black sheep. And I love it because, first of all, you talk about flat pants. I can really relate to funky. Like, I used to dress so outrageously, and people don't expect it now because I'm just so boring. Like, I'm really, really boring. I wear basically the same color blue jeans and a sweater, like, every day. Like, my hair is done the same every day. Like, I'm really, really boring. And so when people see pictures of me as a teenager and I'm wearing, like, red velvet pants with a plaid shirt and a tank top underneath, or fishnet, or like a chain that goes around with rainbow slinky bracelets and high top rainbow laces and a cowboy hat, and I go to school like that, they're like, what are you doing right now? They're like, you're a weird teenager. And I'm like, well, I like to be different. And then I would go like that one day, and then I'd wear breakdowns the next day. And then the next day after that, I'd wear this preppy shirt. So I really was out of the box with a dress. And I love how you kind of led with that, with those plaid pants, like, be yourself. Also, I love the use of curse words and orange crayons. And I have such a different view on swear. As someone who does not swear a lot, I have such a different view on swearing. And I will say that because I don't really swear a lot. In fact, a lot of people are like, oh, I didn't even, you know, like, I just don't swear a lot. So it's not that I don't, I do, but I just don't do it a lot. But I have a very different view when it comes to children and swearing and teaching swearing. So, like, for instance, I've always told my godchildren and my goddaughter that words are words. And swears are just words. There's nothing more than words. And when they're, and you know, their parents kind of have the same thing. They have the same message that when you're mature enough, You know, not a certain age, not like when you're 16, you can say whatever you want. When you're mature enough to use those words in context correctly at the right times and in the right way, then you're mature enough to say them. If you're mature enough to say them, then you can say them. Like, there's not an age thing. And so I remember, she's probably going to kill me, my friend who was also my daughter's teacher, her first grade teacher. You know, we weren't as good friends when she was her teacher. It was until after that we became really, really good friends and we hang out. She happens to swear a lot. And, you know, that was one of her concerns. She's like, oh, I don't want to swear around her, but I have such a bad mouth. Mm-hmm. I was like, I'm sorry?
Can I say something when you've got a pause?
Yeah, definitely. And, I want to ask you about her poem. I know I'm going off a little bit, but this is what your poem makes me think of. But I always say to her, I said, listen, if you slip and you say a swear in front of her, we don't make that a big deal. She hears swears. She hears her parents swear. It's really not a big thing in our circle. They're just words. And then so I remember, and she's like, yeah, but I used to be her. So I had to sit down with my goddaughter and I had to say, listen, I know she was a teacher, but guess what? All your teachers swear. They just don't swear at school. So then the first time, and she was over at my house helping me paint, and my goddaughter was in the other room on her tablet on the bed, and then my friend said, she goes, shit. And then she grabbed her mouth and her eyebrows went up and she was like, oh, my God, you know. And then I looked in the other room and I just see my goddaughter giggling half to death, close, like trying not to look over it. Because I told her, do not make a big deal of it. Do not make her feel awkward. You know, it's just words. So a lot of people don't agree with that, but, you know, it is what it is. And, you know, and she doesn't go around swearing all the time. She doesn't. She's just like, no, I'm not going to really swear a lot, and that's her choice. like she goes, even when I get older, I don't think I'm going to swear. And I'm like, okay, you know. And so, I push this, and this is back to your poem, and this is what I mean. When you talk about use curse words with orange crayons, the reason why I said that story is because when you say use orange crayons, you're talking about expression. And like I always say, words are used to express yourself. And if how you express yourself wants to be dropping the F-bomb, then that's how you express yourself. And I always encourage learning a lot of language. I teach them, my godchildren, a lot of language. So I say, you don't always have to go for the F-bomb. You could use other language. But if you feel you need to, then that's your choice when you get older and you're mature enough. But it's about expression, and I always say that. So when you talk about the orange crayons, it makes me think of how everybody expresses themselves in different ways, and we all need to be accepting. This whole shepherd seek world of perfection, again, that goes along the line of what is a perfect mold. You know, like I said, a lot of people don't agree with me. A lot of adults might say, oh, you shouldn't teach your kids that it's just language or that it's just a way of expression because then they're going to be swearing all the time. Well, no, not really. We're going to have to agree to disagree. But that's that idea of perfection, what somebody else deems as a perfect person or a perfect way to do things, to be obedient and traditional and conventional, like you say in this line. All these things in your poem wraps into that story, and how much I agree with it and how wonderfully it's said here. Toy soldiers standing at attention. You want a bunch of kids that just serve under command. Okay, that's your opinion. I'd rather have, you know, children with free expression who feel comfortable to be themselves and say what they need to say, and if they feel really intensely about it, to say it how they want to say it, when they're old enough and they're mature enough to know when to say it and when not to say it. That's important as well. And then this whole thing, dare to speak. You know, a lot of people are silenced. A lot of people are afraid to go against the mold because people against the mold kind of get labeled, like you say at the beginning, the black sheep. So I love this. I love your idea of raising voice against the normal pace and talking about being yourself. And I'm actually winded from that comment. So Hatter, your thoughts,
Like, I don't know if it's the 23 pounds that I'm rocking or all the talking. I'm not really sure, but I'm out of breath. So how to please speak, because I need to get some water. What do you think about her poem, and then also your, if you, any added comments about your opinions about something that I said that sparked your interest? Hatter? Did I talk too long? Hatter left?
Oh, no, no, I'm here.
Okay.
yeah, the poem, it's well thought out, well written. The go to speak against the afflictions, the brutality, the insignificant majority. The silence is deafening, and it is contributed to. My point is, beware of the black sheep to talk bad about them, because black sheep, they're the ones that are least less afraid to stand up and bark back at the what's wrong or needs changing or their opinion needs to be spoken to. As far as the cursing, I grew up in a non-cursing home. We did not curse. I used to give spirituality talks to small groups or individuals, and one of them was, clean your language up. When opportunity comes to knock and he hears that voice, he hears those cuss words, he's not going to knock on the door. And it's the damn truth. I did one guy I helped, and he just was a potty mouth. Everything was cursed, everything. He was very loud. And I talked to him. I said, you've got to stop that right after. You're going to help yourself. Because as he came to me, then he just wasn't happy. I talked to him for a while. He took from me what he wanted and applied it. Next time I saw him, he owned the shop that he used to be the foreman of. And he came to me because I've been looking for you for months. And he gave me an angel with a diamond in it for the teaching him. It's how people perceive you. And it's not, if they're strangers, it could be your boss. He could be looking for a job, for somebody to head his cruise. And he's not going to hire you. He's not going to want those words around his job site or how you live. It's a perception of how you live, too, to other people. Some think about it. The people that are wealthy tend to think of it as a lower class or non-educated people that speak that way. Whether it is or not, that's the way they interpret it.
Well, so this is the perfect example of, we can agree to disagree, because that pretty much is the other standpoint of what I said. But also, Hatter, there is another statistic that says people who swear tend to be more honest.
Well, you got to go, what caliber of swearing are you talking? Is it every other word?
Well, if they want to, whatever. But like I said, it's about also being mature enough to know where and when and what's appropriate. So I'm not saying you can't be appropriate.
Sure.
There is a manner of appropriateness that, and you need to be mature enough to understand when that it is appropriate. Like, you know, there's no, I'm not sending any children into school swearing up a storm and in the school.
Oh, well,
I have
my moments too. I use them too, but not in common language. It's just a rule. It's a good rule to remember. And if you're looking to advance, you don't talk that way around your parents or your boss. So don't do it. Just make it a habit of not doing it. I mean, it can only be a negative in advancement of your life. But you have every right to do it. That negative didn't come out right. Anyway.
All right, Sweet, do you have anything that you kind of just, we're like really like just having it with your poem over here.
I wrote it. I'm listening. I don't usually give opinions of my work. I
didn't mean about the poem. I meant maybe about the conversation. I meant. not about the poem.
Well, you know, I was always called because of black sheep, the plaid sheep in my family, because I was different.
Yes.
I was a writer. I was a female. There were so many things that I did differently. You know, I looked at the world a little different, but when you're surrounded by a world of men, you do see things differently. So it was just always, you're just the plaid sheep. So I was even worse than being called the black sheep. I was the plaid sheep. So I couldn't even be in the circle of the black sheep of the family. I was the plaid sheep of the family. So that's what it was. But I took the Sound of Music, and with what was going on with the Sound of Music as far as the Nazis being in and all of that, I tried to incorporate, you know, to speak against the afflictions, the brutality, the unspoken, you know, raise your voice against normal pace. So I tried to also incorporate what was going on during that movie. And sometimes if we go with the crowd and we go with what's going on and we stay blinded, we can end up in situations where people just go with the crowd. So my poem is more about, you know, also incorporating what was going on in the movie. And if we don't ever speak up and we don't have our plaid sheep or our black sheep, things can get to the point of everybody just following that tradition where we're standing up like the toy soldiers and we're obedient and we're this and we're that. So I thought it was, you know, kind of hopefully setting that vibe too. So I was kind of going along with that.
Hey, all the black sheep, raise your hand.
I usually always connect poems to the topic, and I find ways to connect to the topic, but I got really, really focused on that story. Your poem just let me away from the Sound of Music into that idea of conformity. So, but yeah, no, I do agree. Excellent. I definitely do see that there too. And that is a very important message. Don't always go with what's going around with you because,
But I'm glad it does spark controversy. Because to be honest with you, I just thought, oh, how cute is that, the little plaid sheep? But you guys went way deep with it, and I really appreciate it. I wrote it called
up.
It's just, you know, a silly little poem I wrote, and you guys are like, no, this is fabulous. So sometimes it also goes to prove that, you know, we as poets don't always have as much confidence as we should. We really think that we're just being silly little people and it's not. You bring out the confidence in me and you say, no, look at your work, really look at it, because you actually said something that was important for people to hear. And that's what I appreciate about both of you, is sometimes I think I'm writing something just, you know, silly and not, and then you're like, well, no, look at what you just said. So I appreciate that vote of confidence.
Yeah, no, definitely. Definitely well-deserved. And I think sometimes when we're writing for one purpose and one perspective, and sometimes we don't always see how relative it could be. I could read this tomorrow and think of a whole different scenario. I could totally throw the swearing bit out the window and apply it to something else that happened into my life where I felt that that shouldn't be conformed and that I shouldn't be judged, and then throw it out the next day and then say, okay, well, let's see this through a different lens. Let's see it through the Sound of Music, Nazi lens. What happens when we all conform into Nazism and we all march like soldiers? Bad things happen. So I think when sometimes when we're writing, we're seeing it from that one perspective, but when it's a really good poem, like some poems are very specific, but the good thing about poetry is that sometimes the message is so wide that it can be taken through many different lenses by many different readers and put into their experience and perspective and then seen in a different way. And you're like, well, I was talking about this time in my life, but like I'm glad that you can kind of experience it and kind of relate to those emotions through a different time in your life. That's similar, the way that you're seeing the lens, and not maybe not similar experience, but where you have similar emotions and convictions and thoughts and saying, no, conformity is not a good thing. And taking that no, conformity isn't a good thing, but leading you down different paths by your experience or whatever lens you're putting it through. And that makes a good poem when you can do it through many, many different lenses, because you're going to reach out in many different ways to many different people through their experience, but still link each other or yourselves through the emotional part of it, and through the statement part of it. So, excellent. We managed to talk about your poem for 25 minutes.
Oh, my God. Well, thank you.
No, thank
and
you. I'm so happy.
Sleepy.
I was...
Yeah, well, when I say, can I say something? I see your face. Oh, jeez. Can I ask a question?
No. That's never my face.
Yeah.
I really love talking. I really love it. And to be honest with you, I thought I would get callers later on in the evening, so I purposely played a lot of the music in the beginning and didn't talk to, like, I didn't do a lot of talking because I knew that some people might be calling towards the end, and I really like the flexibility for conversation, because I, even if it gets wildly off topic sometimes, I like that natural flow of talking, so I don't ever think that hatter.
But only if I'm in overtime. If
I'm in overtime, I'm like, I tell you, I just say, listen, I'm in overtime, and we can't talk right now.
Yep. I bet.
All right, see, I plugged your show, but I didn't plug it very well because I was rushing, so can you plug it correctly?
Yeah, we're just going to do part two of Legends, Myths, and Monsters, because we had so much fun with it, and I did not get enough people involved. So if you have a chance, go through them. It's an amazing group of monsters. I threw out a challenge to AP about the crazy number 11. We call him number 11. And it just, I swear, just write a poem, just look through them. They're insane. I just want to. Yeah.
Well, what are some of the
pages?
What are
another
pages?
Monster.
Sweet.
Yeah,
pick
but pick another monster. Yeah, pick another monster, because I've got another monsters in there. So this is week two, so you got to go in there and pick another monster.
Okay.
So,
well, what are the monsters? Name a couple.
Hold on. Let me get back there. I will get on my little list.
28.
Yes, the 28th. Okay, so some of the monsters are golems, an Ani, a cyclops, an ogre, a leprechaun, a gnome, a goblin, fairies, a gorgon, the mermaid, number 11, that's how we call him, the Mithor, the Centra. A minotaur, sorry. Fawns, the werewolf, the Loch Ness Monster, the griffin, the phoenix. I don't know how to say number 19 either. The unicorn, the dragon, Bigfoot, Hydra, zombies. I don't know what 26 either. Can't say him either.
What's 26?
I don't know. Pontanak.
Pontanak.
Yeah, you can try to say number 11 if you want. We just call him number 11.
Well, okay, number I don't know everything.
Ooh.
No, I don't know that one. Okay, so which one? Phoenix, a basilisk. A basilisk. You got a basilisk. That's talking about Harry Potter right here. A chimera.
Okay.
Is that where you were? No, you said chimera.
Yeah.
I don't know what 26 is. I don't know what that is either.
I don't know how. Yeah, I don't know what 26 is. The Banshee, Dybuke, the Vampire, the Boogeyman. But number 11 is the one we focused on a lot, but because if you read him, he's a scorpion man. These monsters originated in Mesopotamia, yeah, specifically in Babylon, creation myth. They are a hybrid of the scorpion and a man with the body of a scorpion and the face, torso, arms of a man. While they are terrifying in appearance and were created to wage war against gods, they stand as guardians and often warn travelers who might be in danger. Now, I want you to think about that. This man is hideous, frightening, scary, terrifying in appearance. They wage war against God. But they are the ones that will warn you of what dangers become. Now, what kind of danger are these guys warning you of? Because they're scaring the hell out of me.
Like the Mothman.
Okay, well,
like
as a fantasy freak, I would have to go with other things. Because you mentioned centaur, you mentioned a fawn, and I really love Tumnus. But I may not have time to write, but I have dragon poems coming out of my ears.
So there you go. So that, I've got all this going on, and I think the subject deserves part two. So I really think this is pretty great subject matter. So we're going to do a part two.
Mm-hmm. All right, what time you go live?
I go live at 10, which I know is too late for you.
Right. Well, no, I'll just be there for a little bit, yeah. But not a whole bit, a whole lot of it, but a little bit.
I know. I learned what read and run is.
You
can do
read and run is to Sweet Pea is you could read and run after I read my poem so you hear it, and then you can read it.
Okay. You did Bigfoot last week. You got to pick somebody new this week.
Oh, I did.
Bigfoot. Why don't you do the Loch Ness Monster, Nessie?
No, I didn't do Nessie.
No, so why don't you
do it?
Yes, you did. You read Bigfoot last week. You can do the werewolf.
Chimera. Oh my gosh, there's so many
options. You know who did the chimera?
Who? She forgot.
Gress
now.
Did the chimera. Gress.
Oh,
Gress
good.
Did the chimera. Yeah.
Was it Jill?
Okay. All right, guys. So. I got my 90-second warning. I got to press this button.
Okay. Press your button. We'll talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye, guys.
Bye. See you guys.
Yeah.
There's a bad sort of clanging from the clock in the hall.
Science say goodbye.